ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट 23 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। पुरुषो रामचरितम् श्रवणैरुपधारयन् आनृशंस्य परो राजन् कर्मबन्धैर्विमुच्यते। पुरुषो रामचरितम् श्रवणैरुपधारयन् आनृशंस्य परो राजन् कर्मबन्धैर्विमुच्यते। Translation: O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Purport: Here in this material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter the Sanatan Dharma or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. One becomes envious because of being influenced by the designations of the body, but the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body, and therefore he is completely on the transcendental platform. A devotee is never envious of anyone, even his enemy, because the devotee knows that the Lord is his supreme protector. He thinks, what harm can the so-called enemy do? Thus a devotee is confident about his protection. The Lord says, Yayata mang prabhadyante tangas tathaiva bhajamyaham. According to the proportion of one's surrender unto me, I respond accordingly. A devotee must therefore be completely free from envy, especially of other devotees. To envy other devotees is a great offense, a Vaishnava aparad. A devotee who constantly engages in hearing and chanting, Shravana Kirtana, is certainly freed from the disease of envy, and thus he becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. Today is a very happy day, festival day. How can it be happy when we're discussing about Rama, whose pastimes seem to be all full of unhappiness. But Shrinu Sukadam Shubhadam Bhavasam. Hearing gives happiness and auspiciousness in this world of birth and death. Actually, it's happy, but it may not seem happy. Srila Prabhupada comments in the Nectar of Devotion that although the pastimes of Lord Ram seem to be unhappy, it's actually full of happiness. Otherwise, why do people listen? Go on hearing again and again and again. And this hearing about Lord Ram, as we can link with this verse today that I've read today, this hearing about Lord Ram is really a cornerstone of Vedic culture, Hindu culture, if you want. Yeah, in Hindu, it's a major, major part, so that people all over India all worshipped and loved Ram, even if they're not Vaishnavas. and in South India as much as North India, despite all this Dravidian propaganda. But Rama was loved so much here, so much damage to Vedic culture has been done by envious people who have heard about Lord Ram and they don't like him. They're like Ravana. They heard about Ram, but they don't like him. Descendants of Ravana, or at least conceptually, they're like that. But at heart, people, they don't, I still think the people in Tamil Nadu, they don't like this blasphemy of Ram, most of them. But that was publicized recently, that this person whose statue has very enviously been placed outside the Rajagopuram at Srirangam, he had placed a garland of shoes on the murti of Rama, and that was trying to be suppressed, but that was brought out by Rajnikant again recently, and people don't like it. They want to suppress it because they know that even though some of you want, those of you who are, you don't want, just like Ram Mohan does know, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. It's all relevant to Tamil political culture more than religious culture. It's all politics. It's been exploited politically. So that was suppressed because even though people for political reasons have followed this person whose statue is outside the Rajagopuram, at heart, they don't like to hear of such a thing. Unfortunately, these persons, they've made a commentary, or they comment on Lord Rama's pastimes with envy. So they're not going to be free from envy. Here it's stated that one who hears this will become free from the disease of envy. So it's presumed that someone will hear with devotion. That's presumed. It's really characteristic of Kali Yuga that people recite the pastimes of Lord Rama to blaspheme him. And in so many ways, they'll blame him in so many ways of mistreating Sita, of mistreating Shurpanakha, of mistreating Ravana. He is the good guy, right? According to the retelling of he didn't really do anything. It was a small thing, kidnapping someone's wife. And why did Ram? He should have been more detached. So many envious people. But if we actually hear Lord Rama's pastimes, then we'll be free from the disease of envy. And that's one corner, that's one reason we can state why Vedic culture is superior to others. Because one who hears the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, because he is free from envy, then we also become free from envy by hearing those pastimes. So Shunu Sukadam, it's not just a matter of hearing and it's a nice story, but Shubadam makes auspicious means what? Auspicious means to be free of the inauspicious qualities that bind us to this bhavasaram, to this world of birth and death, which means lust, greed, envy, and all these bad qualities which are within the heart. So if hearing about Lord Rama is so central to Vedic culture, and if we hear that, then we should become non-envious. Even at the social level, the dissemination of Lord Rama's pastimes, that should make for, because he is Maryada Purushottam, he has come to teach, by his Ramacharita, by his activities and his character, he's come to teach how one should live in this world. Specifically as a Kshatriya, who establishes Dharma. So he's shown how one should live according to Dharma, how brothers should conduct themselves in relation to the elder brother, how the elder brother should be affectionate for the younger brothers, and so on and so on and so on and so on. The Rama Leela has been instrumental in establishing Dharma, which is really the cornerstone of the Vedic culture. Unfortunately, we don't hear that word very much nowadays, except in relation, misuse of the word, as saying Hindu Dharma, Christian Dharma, Muslim Dharma, which is a misuse of the word anyway. But the Dharma in the sense of how we should conduct our lives in this world according to the principles given in Shastra and by the Shishta, by the great personalities of the past and at the present, that understanding of Dharma is not much spoken about or articulated at the present time, which is the fall down of Vedic culture. Of course, Krishna ultimately tells us to go beyond worldly dharmas. But going beyond them, that is generally not possible unless one has become purified by following them. If we try to give up Vedic dharma without catching tightly hold of the lotus feet of Krishna, then we become fallen. The dharma is essential in human society. And Ramchandra Bhagavan comes to teach this. Unfortunately, envious people accuse him of being envious. The cornerstone of dharma is promoting non-envy. It's a cooperative society. There is hierarchy, but it's cooperative. And the lower placed person shouldn't envy the higher, and the higher shouldn't envy the lower and mistreat them. Ramchandra Bhagavan came to establish that. So they'll say he's envious. You see, he killed the deer and killed Ravana, banished Sita. One of the commentators says that supposing Ravana had surrendered to Rama as he was entreated to do so by Vibhishana, by Mandodari, by even by Kumbhakarna, he told him, "You can't defeat Rama." then, because Vibhishana had come to Rama, and Rama said, "Then, okay, well, after we defeat Ravana, we'll make you king of Lanka." So that it wasn't that Vibhishana was interested in becoming the king of Lanka, and therefore he left Ravana and joined Rama. He wasn't a turncoat. But as a matter of dharma, someone has to be the king. When Ravana is killed and Kumbhakarna is killed, and then it's presumed they're all going to be killed. Indrajit is going to be killed, and then Vibhishana, he'll have to become the king. Someone has to be the king. So one of the commentators, I can't remember who, said that if after Ram had said this to Vibhishana, that Ravana himself had come and surrendered to Ram, and then to keep his word for making Vibhishana the king, then Rama would have given Ayodhya to Vibhishana. You know, he wasn't envious of Ravana. And then again, you could extrapolate. Then Vibhishana would have to go to Nandigram and put the, and then say, you stay. Just like Bharat, he didn't want to take that role of the king, even though it was given to him by his very reluctantly by his father. He didn't want to take that role because he just couldn't do so because my elder brother is there. So, but my father has told me. So he did so, but in a most formal manner. He wouldn't even enter Ayodhya. So in this way we see how dharma is established by Lord Rama. So one who hears Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. That this, of course, parallels the janma karma chame devyame vangyo veti tattvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti sojana. This statement, the Krishna says, one who understands my activities, my birth and activities, in truth, after leaving this body, such a person doesn't return to this material world, but comes to me. So this statement from the Bhagavatam about Lord Ramachandra parallels that. So implicit in this statement, which is made here, is that one will not just hear the pastimes, but one will hear them explained properly so that one can understand them properly. If they're explained by an impersonalist who, despite a covering of Rama Bhakti at heart, is envious of the Supreme Lord because he wants to merge into the Brahma Jyoti, in which there's no bhakti left. There's no service. Savior-savak bhav, that's destroyed by impersonalism. The who is to be served and who is the servant, and the relationship between them, that is destroyed by impersonalism. So it's necessary to hear Ramayana as it is, which is why I decided at one point some years ago to publish an edition of Ramayana in which it is the pastimes of Lord Rama are presented without the contamination of impersonalism or considering him an ordinary person in English. At that time, most of the devotees around the world who read Ramayana, they were reading the Kamala Subramaniam edition by Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, which is horribly mixed with impersonalism. And a very short edition was given by this Rajagopalachari. He's famous. Is he still famous in Tamil Nadu? Yeah? In English and in Tamil. He was also mixed up with that Periyar fellow, although he was himself religious. But even though he was from a Iyengar background, but he wrote the Ram Leela in English at least, with some impersonal overtones. Maybe someone edited it, I don't know. He met Prabhupada in Madras, met him, and he was very appreciative of what Prabhupada was doing. You can see that conversation is there. So these editions, so I thought I should do some edition which presents clearly that Rama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I was thinking of doing that when Bhima Prabhu in Bombay, BBT, he told me that Purna Pragya Prabhu, who at that time is living in Goa, has made some kind of manuscript. So I thought, next time I go to Goa, I'll go and meet him. And he had done. He told me it's pretty rough. I was going to encourage him to publish that or ask him if I could publish it. But he said it's pretty rough. It's taken from the Gita Press edition, which the Gita Press, when they translate books, they do their very best to make it a faithful translation. But even then, some unusual ideas may enter. So he said, well, I just redacted it from that. I made a summary of that, the Gita Press English edition, which is in archaic English. He made it very nicely in simple English, but he said, I just made it for reading to the local children here. That's all. And he wasn't willing to bring it up to the smooth written form. So I asked him then if I could do it. Yeah, he said, yeah, you take it and do. So I edited with help of others, added some quotes from Prabhupada's edition of Bhagavatam and comment like that, and published it like that. At the same time, there were two other editions being published within ISKCON. One was, I believe, by Ran Chaw Prabhu, and the other has become the most popular worldwide edition by Krishna Dharma Prabhu. But unfortunately, in that book, he presents it. It's a great story that's been very popular in India. But I specifically wanted to make it very clear that Ramayana is to be understood the way Valmiki meant it to be understood, and the way that countless generations of Rama Bhaktas, and not only Rama Bhaktas, everyone in Vedic culture knows Ramayana. They've all accepted, well, especially Rama Bhaktas, they accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's the way it can be understood. Otherwise, one cannot properly. Then the benefit of hearing Ramayana will not be there if you think it's just some story, some interesting story. There are so many interesting stories. There must be literally millions of books with interesting stories. But if we think it's mythology or Indian folklore, and in one sense you could say it is Indian folklore, especially the vernacular editions, it's very much part of the folk culture. But if one doesn't accept Lord Rama as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the benefit of hearing Ramayana, that then one will become free from the dirty things within the heart, then that won't take place. It won't awaken devotion to him. So I specifically presented this. I wrote an introduction to specifically establish this point so that people who read it, they can get the actual benefit from it. Otherwise, it's the same story in Kamala Subramanyam's edition. Must be a Tamil smarter, I guess, with a name like that. You get the story, but you don't. The devotion is quashed by the impersonalistic overtone. So I'm going to read this introduction now. How I started it. Oh, at one point in time, someone wrote an article which they published on the internet called A Tale of Two Ramayanas, which is a play on the name of one of the famous books in English literature by Charles Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities, which I won't get in discussing here now. But I know that book quite well, or I did at one point. So, A Tale of Two Ramayanas, and he contrasted how one of those editions produced within ISKCON presented Rama as a great figure in Indian folklore and this and that. He didn't come out and say he's the supreme, but I specifically did that. I wrote, I'll read this now. Lord Ramachandra is not a mythical figure, an ordinary person, or even a very great human being. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source, maintainer, and controller of uncountable universes, both spiritual and mundane. Pretty clear, right? As the Supersoul, He is present in every atom and in the heart of every living being. He knows everything. Oh, it's been retyped with mistakes. He knows everything, past, present, and future. I just make a note to correct that. Lord Rama is fully replete with six opulences, namely, maybe that's fully replete seems to be, what's the word, I can't remember, unnecessary. Fully replete with six opulences, namely strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. He is the reservoir of all auspicious qualities and is the ultimate goal of life for the yogis, renunciants, and especially the devotees who ever delight in glorifying His inconceivable pastimes. Being an expansion of Krishna, the original form of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra eternally resides in His own planet in the spiritual world. He is accompanied there by His expansions and associates, headed by His consort Sita, His brothers Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, and His celebrated servant Hanuman. Out of extraordinary compassion for the suffering conditioned souls, the Lord occasionally descends into this material world and is thus known as an avatar, literally one who descends. The Lord explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sujamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatushkritam dharma sthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. When the Supreme Lord comes to this world, He does so out of His own sweet will. Unlike the conditioned souls, He is not forced to take a body according to previous karma. Being far above the laws of karma and never even slightly under their jurisdiction, the Supreme Lord descends in His eternal Satchidananda form. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. When the Supreme Lord descends, He shows His sublime nature by performing incomparable activities. When He came in His original form as Krishna, He killed many apparently unconquerable demons, held the Govardhan hill on the tip of His little finger for 7 days when He was apparently only a small child. Made the sun rise again after it had set, and took His friend Arjuna on a journey beyond the edge of the universe. When He came as... Yeah. He took His friend on a journey beyond the edge of the universe. Yeah. Yes, just read it. Yeah. Krishna comes home. Yashoda says, "Oh, what did you do today?" "Oh, I killed a few demons." Lord Brahma came, offered some prayers. Okay, take a bath and go milk the cows. I'm cooking your supper. When he came as Vamanadeva, he assumed the form of a dwarf, yet with two footsteps crossed over the whole creation. Assuming a gigantic form as the transcendental boar, Varaha, he picked up the earth planet which had fallen out of its orbit. As half man, half lion, Nrisimha, he stopped the atrocities of the demon king Hiranyakashipu by killing him. Well, that's actually one reason why he feels himself to be a human being when he comes. Because if it's just, so the half man, half lion form killed Hiranyakashipu, what'll I do tomorrow? I think I'll cross over the universe with two steps. Oh, did that before. If it was, he doesn't become bored. He does the same things again and again. But he doesn't become bored. So if he's in human-like consciousness, then these things, and he presents himself as a human, then it becomes fascinating to his devotees. But he is supreme, and that is to be accepted. I read fairly recently, Satsarup Maharaj, before he was initiated in New York City, he heard Prabhupada talking with an Indian man, and they were discussing, and Prabhupada says, Narayan has four hands, and Krishna has two hands, and they were discussing, and the Indian man was talking with him like this, as if, you know, just like completely normal. And he was thinking, and Satsarup was thinking, how could someone have four hands? But for the Indian man, it was, it's just part of the discussion. You just accept, that's all. That's all. You don't try to understand it. You just, Narayan has four hands. Yeah, everyone knows Narayan has four hands, right? Well, biologically, we never saw. Well, if he has four hands, then why didn't there should be more? Because by evolution, if someone gets four hands, there's better than two hands. So the two-handed form should have faded out, and the four-handed ones, it was a mutation or something. We should have one. Maybe you should go to six hands or ten hands. There's too much. Maybe they were in the past, but they all died out like the dinosaurs. We don't bother ourselves like all these discussions. We just say, Narayan has four hands. Yeah. So, although such extraordinary feats are doubted by men of puny intelligence, they are simply play for the Supreme Lord, who effortlessly creates, maintains, and destroys millions of universes. Similarly, when the Supreme Lord appeared as Ramachandra, he performed the wonderful activity of slaying the tyrant Ravana, who was not to be... We got the Tamil version? We don't have a Tamil version. Do we do? No, we don't have. Who is not to be killed by any other person. Ostensibly assuming the form and personality of a human being, Lord Rama enjoyed many sweet pastimes with his dear devotees. These pastimes are inconceivable to the faithless, but are a source of transcendental joy for the theists. The story of Lord Rama has given pleasure and solace to theists for many thousands of years and continues to do so. Actually, it should be many millions of years. Let's change that also. Not so long ago, when the people of India were accustomed to discuss the transcendental activities of the Lord, every Hindu knew the pastimes of Lord Rama as well as the back of his hand. Oh, and I have to re-edit all of this. Among the three epics famous in India, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Srimad Bhagavatam, the Ramayana was traditionally most popular, perhaps due to its relative simplicity and cohesiveness of plot. The action, drama, and pathos of Ramayana still place it among the world's most popular stories. Recently, with the spread of the bhakti movement throughout the world, there has been a revival of interest within India also about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. This bhakti revival has been brought about largely due to the efforts of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and the prime exponent of bhakti in the modern age. Srila Prabhupada elaborately described the pastimes of Krishna in his writings and also wished that the pastimes of Lord Rama be widely broadcast. Quoting from a letter from Srila Prabhupada, "Regarding seeing your book on Lord Ramachandra partly translated into English, I am very much eager to see it. I have to translate all the Puranas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and many other theistic literatures left by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I have a great desire to translate the Valmiki Ramayana because that is authorized. It appears that in the Western countries there is a great demand for real knowledge of Vedic literature. So you are a learned scholar both in English and Hindi, and you can do this completely devoted to the service of Lord Ramachandra. Ramayana was originally composed in Sanskrit by the great sage Valmiki, and later many versions were composed in the vernacular languages of India. Unfortunately, many of the translators and commentators did not come in the pure devotional lineage of Valmiki and introduced many misconceptions and speculations about Lord Rama in their works. As a result, the pristine position of Lord Rama as the Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead remains hidden to the readers of such texts. This present edition attempts to present the pastimes of Lord Rama in their true glory. Although it is a summary study, none of the main body of the story has been left out. It is hoped that in the not too distant future, a devotional scholar will present a verse-by-verse translation of Valmiki Ramayana for the ever-increasing number of devotees throughout the world. Thank you, Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu, for taking that up. We pray that by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, this edition of Ramayana will shower the highest fortune on its readers by awakening in their hearts loving feelings for the lotus feet of Lord Rama. We beg the devotees to bless us with their mercy so that we may also attain such a benediction. Again, it must be emphasized that the reading of Ramayana will give greatest benefit if taken not simply as an exciting story, but with the understanding of the supramundane and eternally supreme position of Lord Rama. Those who read with this awareness will ultimately attain the greatest benediction of life, that of going back to Godhead. Janma karma chame divyam evang yo veti tatvataha tyakva dehang punarjanma naiti mameti surjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. Actually, this edition with this introduction should be widely distributed in Tamil. Isn't it? Due to all this misinformation that's going out. It's, the Prabhupada's books, but actually it's required to refute all the wrong ideas. There are refutations here and there of all these wrong ideas. It's required, preaching against these rascal ideas. Okay, then I finish this introduction with a text that is adapted from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, 26, purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, which someone else can read, and I'll just go and come back again.
Lord Sri Rama, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is attractive not only in His personal features, but also in his transcendental activities. It is so because the Absolute is absolute by his name, fame, form, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, etc. The Lord descends on this material world out of his causeless mercy and displays his various transcendental pastimes as a human being, so that human beings attracted towards him become able to go back to Godhead. Men are naturally apt to hear histories and narrations of various personalities performing mundane activities without knowing that by such association one simply wastes valuable time and also becomes addicted to the three qualities of mundane nature. Instead of wasting time, one can get spiritual success by turning his attention to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. By hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Lord, one contacts directly the personality of Godhead. And by hearing about the personality of Godhead from within, all accumulated sins of the mundane creature are cleared. Thus, being cleared of all sins, the hearer gradually becomes liberated from mundane association and becomes attracted to the features of the Lord. The whole idea is that simply by hearing about the Lord's pastimes, one can become one of the associates of the Lord. One can attain to the highest perfection of life simply by attentive hearing of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord from the right sources. This process of hearing in the association of the devotees is especially recommended in this age of quarrel, Kali. Adapted from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Verse 26, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
So continuing that point, that the actual message of the of Ramayana remains incomprehensible to those who do not accept Rama as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not just in a theoretical sense, but they should understand that also. Those who accept it, then Ram Leela is meaningful to them. Otherwise, it becomes just another story. And then we want to go and watch the movies, what stories they have in the movies. The sadness of Ram Leela, pathos, and that's called Karuna Ras in Sanskrit, and pathos. That is very much intrinsic to Ram Leela. If it's seen as mundane, it's just some other story. Love stories, so many stories, love stories. They're Gone with the Wind and this and I don't know. I'm trying to think of some. Romeo and Juliet, another love story. Famous love story. But what's the difference between Ram's love for Sita and Gone with the Wind, or Romeo and Juliet, or Nala and Damayanti, which is another mundane love story in Mahabharata. It's in Mahabharata, but there's nothing transcendental about it. Even for that matter, Savitri and Satyavan. It's also in mind. There's nothing Krishna conscious about it. It teaches Sri Dharma, but there's nothing intrinsically transcendental about it. So there is a difference. We learn from the behavior of Sita, Savitri, Damayanti about the Sri Dharma, how a woman should be so faithful to her husband. Gandhari, there are so many. They're the famous chaste women in history. But if we think that The attachment between Rama and Sita is something on the mundane platform. Then, katam abhyudayo bhavet, if we take Ram Leela to be some activity of karma, the karma of some person within this world, without understanding janma karma chame divyam, Krishna's activities are transcendental. Or if we take Rama to be a jnani, there is that this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu beat Advaita Acharya for teaching Yoga Vashishta, which is a work in which Rama is apparently learning all about how he's in Maya. Everything is Maya. Everything is all one. Everything in this world is impersonal. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like that. So if we accept Rama as being a mundane person or an impersonalist, funny idea, huh? It must have been a prominent book that Advaita Acharya was teaching it. Then bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi vidivartate tavat bhakti sukhasyatra katam abhyudayo bhavit. We may get some inspiration on the mundane platform to be a dharmic person. That also impersonalists, they promote maybe more than Vaishnavas, they promote dharma, worldly dharma. We may get that, or we may get some idea of merging, which is, by the way, in that Ramananda Sampradaya, although it's devotional, there's definitely an overlay of impersonalism there. I was discussing once, many years ago, with Seva Vilas Prabhu, who's from a Brahmin family of Varanasi, which is, apart from being a place of where people go to die, and it's famous as a place of Lord Shiva, it's also traditionally been a great center of Ramalila. Especially on the other side of the river, Rampur has been a place where Ramalila is enacted. So he knows very well about this. So I was discussing with him, and he said that if you discuss with a Ramanandi and you just go a little deep, you'll find that ultimately they're all impersonalists. And he said no. He's from that background. So if the actual bliss of bhakti can't happen if we're still infected by desires for karma and jnana, so we are informed by Rupa Goswami. And then what happens, that if we don't have the bliss of devotion, then we may start to suspect Lord Rama and ascribe mundane motives to him, become offensive, or we may think that he's subject to ordinary morality. He wasn't a very moral person. He did so many things. So really, Ram Leela has to be heard and understood properly. If we don't understand it properly, then we'll misunderstand. That's inevitable. There's no way to avoid that. Either you understand properly, or the misconceptions, which are already there in the heart, they will arise. And especially if we hear from people who don't present Ram Leela in the transcendental way, in the parampara, the Shuddha Vaishnava parampara system, then they themselves will give misconceptions. They may even invent some we didn't think of. So it's very important to get from the right source. So actually, although this Ram Leela is about Ram, And in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there traditionally hasn't been much emphasis. The emphasis is on Krishna. I was in Bengal moving among the Vaishnavas, or traditional Vaishnavas, Sahajir-influenced Vaishnavas, for so many years. And you'll hardly find in Bengali culture, maybe probably less than in any other part of India, if you exclude the Muslims. there's not much about Rama in that culture, or Shiva for that matter. There, it's not that people are totally ignorant, Shivratri is also celebrated, but definitely more so. If you're in Calcutta, then you'll find that the Ram Leela, Ram Navami, Vijayadashami, Shivratri, it's more the Marwaris and Biharis who are there many of in Calcutta. They celebrate more than the Bengalis. They're more into that. And of course, in Bengali culture, there's the Vaishnavas and the Shaktas. So the big thing is the Durga Puja and Kali Puja. And Lakshmi Puja also they celebrate. Lakshmi Puja, they also celebrate that. But especially the Durga Puja and Kali Puja. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there's not much stress on Ram Leela, although we do find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami to include the celebration of Ram Navami among the festivals to be celebrated by the Vaishnavas, and he himself, he celebrated Vijayadashami, and we find an extensive description of Nityananda Prabhu in his childhood performing Ram Leela. He had all the local village boys in Ek Chakra perform Ram Leela, and all the elder people became amazed. How could he know all these things being such a young boy? Which suggests that the Ram Leela wasn't discussed so much in Bengal even at that time. Even though that part of Bengal's getting out towards what is now considered the Hindi-speaking belt. It's near the border of Bihar. getting out toward that way. They were surprised, well, he is Lakshman in Ram Leela. He took the part of Lakshman. There's an extensive description how in the course of the game they were playing, he got hit by the arrow of Indrajit, and then he was unconscious, and they couldn't revive him. And then someone thought, and then after a long time, they thought, oh, what do we have to do? Say, Sushaina has brought these, bring the medicine for you. Okay, then he revived. He understood what to do. He couldn't get up without that. So anyway, the Ramayana, even though it's not central to Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, as it is, for instance, in Sri Vaishnava culture, in which Ram Leela is very prominent. Maybe not as much as Krishna Leela, though there are... Anyway. But Ramayana is better, yeah, through Ram Leela, through Gaudiya Siddhanta or Sri Vaishnava Siddhanta, but especially through Gaudiya Siddhanta, because in Gaudiya Siddhanta is emphasized rasa vichara. And the charm of Ramayana is the feelings, the rasa. The story is exciting, yeah, good, exciting story. But it's the feelings that are generated, which can be understood best through the teachings of the Gauriyas. Now there may be a problem in doing so, in as much as we find that our Gauriya Acharyas say that we should be one-pointed in our worship of Krishna. Just concentrate on Radha Krishna. Don't even think of Dwaraka, what to speak of Ram Leela and other things. So how are we going to... But again, the Acharyas say that, but we can't think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was enacting Ram Leela on Vijayadashami, that he lost his devotion to Krishna, or became diverted. Because the Gauriyas, they understand it's Krishna's play. He takes various forms for playing. And Ram Leela had to be there also, so that The gopis in Vrindavan, they could chastise Krishna. In one of the ways they chastised him, "Oh, we heard from Purnamasi that you're in your last life you were Ram, so you were cruel to women even then. You're cruel to us now. You see, you had the nose of Suparnaka cut off and you banished Sita. You're a terrible person. Life after life, you're giving so much trouble to women." And you see, and as Vamana, Bali was a very good, pious king, and you just cheated him. You know, what kind of person you are? You need to go and get some psychological advice. They didn't say that. Probably they would if they were 21st century gopis. Fortunately, they weren't. Stick him in prison. Well, he was supposed to be born in a prison, but he didn't like that. So he went to Vrindavan, got born there instead. No, he was born in the prison. Well, some people say. Some people in Mathura, they say he was born in prison. They don't know. Anyway, it's all part of Krishna likes to be right. And also in the, where is that? The Pavan Sarovara. The gopis are saying, "You see, you're talking, you're such a big man, you're Supreme Personality God. There are so many monkeys, you love playing with the monkeys. But Rama took the monkeys and did something spectacular, not just stealing the butter and feeding it to the monkeys. He did something where he made a bridge over the ocean and took the monkeys there. So what can you do with the monkeys except feeding them with the stolen butter?" So they were chastising him. They said, "You couldn't even make a... You say you're Rama, but you couldn't even make a bridge of stones over this little sarovara here." So then Krishna did it. Then the gopis had to find some other way to insult him. Sita doesn't insult him. No one insults Rama, not from his inner entourage, except Lakshman sometimes. But then Ram shuts him down. Sometimes Lakshman little bit gets on the case like that. So this the feelings, the feelings, that's for the Gauriya Vaishnavas, that's the essence. That's why Krishna Jate Kela Sarvotam Naralila Narabhu Taha Sharup, that of all the forms of the Lord, which is the best? Can't be Krishna, because Krishna is just a man. Narasimha, very powerful. Or Krishna's only got two hands, Narayan has four hands, so it must be Narayan. There may be discussion, but the Gauriyas accept Krishna as the best, the man, the human-like form. Why is that? Because in human-like forms, of which Krishna and Rama are prominent, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Vamana, well, he appears among the demigods, and then there's Parashuram, Balaram, Buddha, not much ras. There's no ras in. If there's any ras, they'll snuff it out, blow it out, nirvana. No. Kalki, yeah, but really the rasa is there in Krishna Leela and Ram Leela, and it's full of pathos, this Karuna Ras. It's full of sadness. It starts off happy, and then, but the story doesn't really get going until the sadness gets there with Ram being banished to the forest, and then all the inhabitants of Ayodhya, yugayitam nimeshena, every moment they're feeling in the separation of Rama. Dasharath couldn't take it at all, just passed. So it becomes sad, then it becomes a little bit happy again. Rama and Sita are living happily in the forest, but that also gets spoiled. And then they come back to Ayodhya, and then everything's settled up. Everything's nice. And then again, Ram is obliged by his pastimes as Maryada Purushottam, the personality who establishes dharma in this world, he's obliged to banish Sita. So it's full of suffering. Even Kaikeyi, she was, actually she loved Rama. I believe that's in Kamban Ramayana, that is emphasized, that Rama was close to Kaikeyi more than his own mother. It's in Kamban Ramayana. And then Lakshman was close to Kaushalya? Lakshman was very close to Kamban sees that. So she, Kaikeyi also loved Ram, but just by whatever, Leela Shakti, she became influenced by this mantra. And she, but Rama, he was also, he always referred to her as his mother, and Lakshman wanted to kill Kaikeyi and Dasharath. Dasharath's banishing you, well, better kill him. That's Lakshman. And Rama said, no, she's my mother. She always saw like that. So it's inconceivable how Kaikeyi could do that. Even she's from... no bad thought had come in her mind, especially toward Ram. She's from noble parentage, a very cultured family. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport in the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam, in this discussion of Ram Leela, that Rama, by his pastimes, even though they're completely transcendental, he teaches how, by being attached to women in this world, one has to suffer so many tribulations. So we can also deduce from this that one aspect of this material world, why so much tribulation from being attached to a woman, which causes one to be tied in this material world, attachment to woman. Not necessarily even for sex, because you see old people, old men are attached to their wives. And when there's no question of sex at that age, except maybe in this absolutely insane modern world, but it's an emotional attachment, but that binds one to this material world. But another thing we can deduce from this, from Ram Leela, is the fickleness of women, that even Kaikeyi, she was very happy to get the news that Ram would be coronated, but just a little poisonous talking from Mantara, and she completely changed her whole outlook, to the point that she didn't even mind if her husband died, which he did. Just out of some fickleness. And even Sita, she's the supreme personality of the consort, expansion of Radha. So she also, why did she insist? You get this, dear. Rama could understand there's something wrong here, but he became obliged by his wife and Lakshman. Then Sita insisted that Lakshman go, hearing the Maricha make that sound as if he's Ram in trouble, and Lakshman said, no, no question, no, there's no problem. And then she accused him horribly, unfairly. Although Lakshman had never shown any trace of any lusty desire toward her, but or any trace of any enmity or envy of Rama, but Sita accused him of this fickleness and unreasonableness. Of course, it's not absent in men, but it's especially expected in women. And I don't know that much about it, because I don't associate much, but we learn from Shastra about this, so we accept that. Lakshman never held any grudge against Sita. He gave his life, actually. He was dead, apparently, for her sake. Lakshman also showed that. Lakshman also showed dharma. When he wanted to kill Dasharath, that was also one aspect of dharma. That someone, Guru Apyavaliptasya Karya Karya Majanata Utpanna Pratipannasya Parityago Vidhiyate. Even a guru, if he acts wrongly, instructs wrongly, or falls down from his position, should be rejected immediately. And kshatriya dharma is, as Srila Prabhupada writes, that one should not, a kshatriya will not hesitate to kill even his own brother if required. It's in kshatriya dharma, it may be necessary. Parashuram, who took birth as a brahmana, but due to the mix-up of the payasam, then he had the nature of a kshatriya. That was two generations before. He had the nature of a kshatriya. So he killed his mother, and that's praised. That nirvichara, without concern, he accepted because his father told him he did that. And of course, Parashuram knew that my father is so powerful, he'll be pleased with me, he'll ask me for a benediction, and I'll ask him to bring my mother back to life, like that. So, fickleness of women can also be understood. So many points of dharma if it can be understood from Ramayana. It's not an ordinary story. It's the most instructive for us how to live in this world. And of course, when Lakshman, he wanted to kill Dasharath, but he didn't just go and do it. He said to Rama, I'm going to go and do it. And then Rama told him, no, don't do it. So Lakshman did what he was supposed to do, and if Rama had permitted, he would have done it. He wanted to do it. But he followed Rama. That was another aspect of dharma. Because Rama, from a higher platform of dharma, said, no, don't kill your father. And then Lakshman, from the platform of dharma, obeyed his older brother, who he knew to be faultless. At that time, he was considering Dasharath to have been faulty to such a degree that he deserved to be killed. But he consulted. He didn't just take the decision by himself, which would have had any weighty decision. One has to consult higher authority and not take it independently. Even if one is convinced that I'm right, I have to do this. But if it's going to have some... every decision has some consequences, but especially major decisions, one should consult with one's authorities. This sadness that pervades Ramalila, another anecdote we know from Ramalila, that when Rama and Sita were lying on the ground resting at night, Lakshman would guard them. He asked the Nidra Devi, who later appears, the goddess of sleep, who later appeared in Lanka to put everyone deeply asleep while Hanuman was making a tour of inspection. So Lakshman said, now you go away. You leave me for the next 14 years. So I will stay awake when Sita and Rama are resting. I will stay awake and guard them. So he was in the ashram of Guha, and they were lamenting how Sita and Rama, they lived in the palace. They should be have all comfort, and now they're lying on the ground. They're resting on the ground. Of course, Lakshman, with whatever grass and everything, he made as comfortable a bedding as he could, and especially Sita, because Kshatriyas, they live in opulence, but they're also, they have two sides. They can live in opulence, and then they can take great suffering and difficulty also when they're out on the battlefield and fighting, there's not just opulence. They have to take the difficulty also to be a bona fide Kshatriya. And Rama and Lakshman, they were already accustomed to that because they had gone with Vishvamitra. So Vishvamitra took them. He didn't have any luxurious beds to offer them or any such thing. They would lie down at night on the ground, and they were quite happy to do so. So for Ram, that wouldn't matter so much, although Lakshman didn't like to see him lying there. But especially for Sita, Sita was very happy, actually, to be with Rama. She wouldn't have that much opportunity if she was there in Ayodhya, because the women stay in their place and the men stay in their place, and they don't mix that much, even if they're married. But in the forest, she was very happy. She could associate with Ram all the time. But so she was happy, but Lakshman was very unhappy seeing how Lakshman and Guha together, they were lamenting how they have to just lie down on the ground, and we can't do anything more than that. And of course Ram had taken that vow also, because living in the forest, there were proposals that, yeah, we can make a nice situation in the forest. But no, I'm living in the forest. The idea of going to the forest is not to live in comfort. So he matted his hair and took the bark clothing, and he took the austerities of that life. He didn't want to convert it into a comfortable situation. So Guha and Lakshman, they were saying, oh, so much distress seeing Sita and Ram lying on the ground, but there was so much more distress to come. They couldn't have imagined at the time. It got worse and worse. And everything became nice with the killing of Ravana. Then the problem was finished. And then Rama could go back to Ayodhya. And then again, something came up. This Ravana, he's always saying, what is this Rama? He didn't take a benediction that I can't be killed by any man. So Vishnu had to come as Ram to kill him. But he says, who is this? Again and again and again he was warned, don't take him to be like an ordinary man, he's so powerful. So his advisors, they told him, Maricha told him, don't take him to be an ordinary man. But during the war, he was sitting in his palace thinking, a bunch of men and monkeys, I'm not going to go and fight them. It's below my dignity. So he sent out his sons, his brother, one after one they were killed. But he wouldn't go out because he thought, it's below my dignity. Even though Rama was killing them all, he didn't wake up to the fact that he is not just a human. He's so powerful. If he thought of going out, he'd say, no, why should I go out? It's just a human, that's all. And one after one they were being killed. But actually, indirectly, by kidnapping Sita, he acknowledged how powerful is Ram. If Ram was actually just a nothing, and Ravana wanted to take Sita, then he would have just gone up and just pushed Ram and Sita out of the way and taken Sita. Why? But he didn't dare to do that. He wouldn't admit that. But he went through a whole drama to kidnap Sita. So which indirectly acknowledged how powerful this Rama is. Although he'd never admit it up to the very moment of his death. That's a demon. A very deep demoniac spirit. So there are so many things we have to learn from Ramalila. It's so much extent in Indian culture. Now during this lockdown, the Doordarshan TV, government TV company, they're again showing the Ram Leela. I believe, I didn't just saw the headline, they're showing it from the 1980s. They're showing it again to give people something to be satisfied with during while they're locked down. So maybe that's good, I see. Some edition of Ramayana. So, there are so many things to be learned from Ramlila. It's his own pastimes, but it's his pastimes of establishing Vedic culture, Vedic dharma. So it's meant for learning from. Krishna Lila is not like, well, especially Krishna's Gopi Lila. That's not meant for learning. What do we learn from that? It's beyond learning, and it's definitely not to be imitated. It's just Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Ramlila is also Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. But Krishna Lila is not for imitating. The rascals, they imitate Krishna's pastimes of dancing with the gopis. Why don't they imitate Rama's pastimes of protecting his wife? Because they're rascals, that's all. Just one thought I had this morning, that Gaur Nithai, on this day, they could have some bows and arrows. Ram and Lakshman. But we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he enacted Ram Leela. He actually took the role of Hanuman on the Vijayadashami day. And Nithyananda in his childhood, as I mentioned, he took the role of Lakshman. Anyway, it's a thought, because when they're in that mood. Now I'm going to read from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navrit Dhamma Mahatmya Parikrama Khanda, chapter 14, the description of Sri Muda Druma Dvipa and Rama Leela. That Murari Gupta's, the site of his house is just behind the if you go in the fields behind the, is it, I can't remember, is it Jogpeet or Sri Chaitanya Mat or Advaita Bhavan, there's Murari Gupta's house, where Murari Gupta is Hanuman in Ramalila. So he was worshipping the deities of Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman there. And that temple's there, is a temple run by Sri Chaitanya Mart. That's Modadruma Dweep. So, that's describing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes. No, that's not Modadruma Dweep. That's the place of Murari Gupta's house. In this Parikrama Khanda, we find Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how Nityananda Prabhu took Jiva Goswami on a parikrama of Navadvip, which is mentioned in Bhakti Ratnakara and elaborated upon by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he explained all the different places in Navadvip Dham. So when they came to Mamgachi, that's the name of the village now, and it was 500 years ago, it seems. Nityananda said to Jiva, here in Modadrumadvip is Ayodhya. It is Ayodhya. In a previous kalpa, when Rama was banished to the forest, he came to this place with Lakshman and Janaki. So Ram Leela is also within Navadvip Dham. He built a hut under a huge banyan tree and lived happily for some time. Seeing the effulgence of Navadvip, the son of Raghu began to slightly smile. How attractive was that form, green as new grass, with lotus eyes and a graceful bow in hand, wearing the dress of a brahmachari. and his head piled with matted locks, he stole the minds of all living entities. Seeing Rama smiling, Janaki asked him why. He said, "Listen, Sita, there's one very secret story. When the glorious age of Kali, the glorious age of Kali, advanced." Why is it glorious? Because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "When the glorious age of Kali advents, I will display a yellow complexion form here in Nadia. I will take birth in the womb of Sachi in Jagannath Mishra's house. I will give all the fortunate souls who see my childhood pastimes the supreme gift of prema. At that time I will enjoy my beloved educational pastimes and reveal the glories of the holy name. I will then take sannyas and go to Puri, and my own mother will weep with my wife in her arms." You see? Making women weep. Hearing this, Sita asked, "O lotus-eyed Ram, Kamala Lochana, why will you make your mother cry? Why will you give up your wife and take sannyas? What happiness is there in giving sorrow to your wife? I am your wife." Sri Ram replied, "O dear one, you know everything, but you have become ignorant just to teach the living entities. Listen, Sita, my devotees relish prema bhakti in two ways. In union with me, they enjoy sambhog, the enjoyment of being with Krishna or Rama, and in separation from me, they enjoy vipralamba, separation from him. My eternal associates desire sambhog, but I mercifully give them vipralamba. The devotees know that distress due to separation from me is actually the topmost bliss. After separation, when union occurs, they feel happiness so much greater than before, a million times multiplied. That is the explanation of how there can be happiness in separation. You should accept this mood, which is described in the four Vedas. She who is known in as Aditi in the Vedas is now Mother Kaushalya and will become Mother Sachi in Gauranga's pastimes. And you, Sita, will serve me as Vishnu Priya. In separation, you will worship my deity and spread my glories. Separated from you, I will worship a golden Sita deity in Ayodhya. But this topic is very confidential. Sita, do not reveal this to the people now. This Navadvipa is my dear place. Even Ayodhya is not equal to it. When Kali Yuga comes, this huge banyan tree, Ramavata, will disappear from vision and stay here in an unmanifest form. In this way, Rama passed his time here with Lakshman and Sita. Later he went to Dandakaranya to complete his activities. See here, Nityananda is telling Jiva, see here the place where his heart stood. By the desire of the Lord, Rama's friends, Guhak, took birth here in a Brahmana's family. His name was Sadananda Vipra Bhattacharya. He knew nothing in the three worlds except Rama. He was present in, actually that we find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, there was Anupam, the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatana, and he was also a great devotee of Lord Rama. So it seems by the preaching of the Gauriyas following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Krishna Leela has become so prominent among the Vaishnavas in Bengal that Rama Leela is very much in a back seat. But we do find that at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were Vaishnavas who were, even then the number of Vaishnavas who were worshipping, who were focused, their bhakti was focused on Krishna was more, but there were those who were worshipping Rama also, and Murari Gupta is there also among the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, referring back to Sadananda Vipra Bhattacharya, he was present in Jagannath Mishra's house when Gauranga was born. At that time, all the demigods came to see the child. The exalted Sadananda realized by the demigods' presence that his Lord had taken birth. In great delight, he returned home, and while meditating on his worshipable Lord Ramachandra, he saw Gaurasunda. Lord Gauranga was seated on a throne and surrounded by the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, who were waving chamaras. Then Sadananda saw Ramachandra, green as grass. On Rama's right was Lakshman, the abode of Ananta. On his left was Sita, and in front was was Hanuman. Seeing this, the Vipra understood the truth about the Lord. The Vipra went to Mayapur in great ecstasy, and unseen by anyone, he feasted his eyes on the form of Gauranga. Blessed am I, Dhanyo, Dhanyasmi, blessed indeed. Ramachandra is present before me, Dhanyasmi, is present before me as Gaurachandra. Later when the Sankirtan movement started, Sudananda took part by dancing and chanting the name of Gaura. Hare Krishna, Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.